It's Tony Mac and the Triplett with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want. Now, here they are, Tony Mac and the Triplett.
Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mac and the Triplett, that feels so good to say. Obviously, I'm Tony Mac. If you listen to the Cube Show or the Tom Abraham Show, you know who I am. I'm around all the time. You have to excuse me. I've been fighting something all day, which is why I have a fantastic co-host here with me today. The other part of Tony Mac and the Triplett half. It's weird to say Triplett and half. It really doesn't really make sense, but that's because it's his last name. Really good friend of mine. We've done a podcast together the last 2 years, College Football Podcast. And I went up to Archie Shea, and I said, "Hey, Archie, what can I do to get our podcast? We want to redo our podcast again this year. What can I do to get it on the UMP website?" And he said, "Give me a week and let me think about it." And then he came back and said, "Hey, you just want to do a Saturday show, 9 to 11? Absolutely. So I got with my friend Aaron, and we talked about it, and he was 100% ready for it. So everybody, I want to introduce you to one of my best friends. He's recently married. I was a groomsman in his wedding. He will be a groomsman in my wedding coming up in October. It's my good friend, Aaron Triplett. Aaron, welcome in, man. What's up?
Thanks, Antonio. This is great. You know, this is just sitting here thinking about this all week, the lead up. You know, we had a delay. It didn't start the weekend that we wanted it to, but we're finally here. And, you know, this is awesome.
Yeah,
this whole thing is awesome. And thanks for putting it together and having me on. You know, this is great.
Of course. And you don't have to be coy. You can tell everybody why it didn't happen. The show got pushed back like almost a month because I had driving school, got in trouble and had driving school. And Archie didn't want us to be taking a break like our second week into the show. He wanted us to have a good start. So it's my fault, but we got this thing running now. We got 2 hours, all right? We usually try to cut our podcast to about an hour, so we got a whole lot we can talk about. We're long-winded guys, so that's good. So what I'm going to do now, since we have a lot of time, let you tell everybody a little bit about your sports background, who you're a fan of, where you're from. Let everybody know what Aaron Triplett's football situation is.
Well, first I'm going to talk about the podcast for just a second, how we went for an hour. How we typically tried to cut it to an hour. And now this extra hour is so much better. Just thinking about how much better this extra hour is, it gives us so much more chance to, because sometimes we'd spend half an hour talking about one thing, and then we were like, oh, we got half an hour to finish up all this rest of this stuff, probably, you know, 2 hours worth of stuff in 30 minutes. But, yeah, I've born and raised Gunnersville, Alabama, not too far from here. I grew up an Auburn fan. You know, in this state that we live in, you have to choose when you're born. You don't get to choose not to choose. You have to choose when you're born here. Born and raised an Auburn fan. My parents are both proud alumni of the university. My dad played football for Pat Dye. Walked on. Was on an SEC championship team. So I've bled orange and blue my entire life. My brother goes to Auburn. I'm the only one in my family so far who has not attended the university, but it doesn't mean I don't bleed with it. But so always been an Auburn fan. I'm a huge follower of sports in general. I tell everybody that I know a little bit about a lot. So if you ask me something about some sport, I'm probably going to know at least a little bit about it.
That's very true. And you said that you're an Auburn fan, which for a good portion of our listeners, that's good. But for some of our listeners, you're going to get a lot of this.
You done messed up, Aaron!
Yes, understandable. That it comes with it, though, being here. My father-in-law is a big Alabama fan, so.
Yeah, I've met Scott. He definitely is. And one of my favorite stories, one day we'll have to get Matt to call in, your dad, and since you mentioned that he was a walk-on at Auburn and he played under Pat Dye, and one of my favorite stories he tells a lot of good Auburn stories, but one of my favorite stories was the time that Bo Jackson broke his nose in practice. So that I mean, a broken nose is awful, and it sucks, and if anybody breaks your nose, you're probably not going to be too happy about it, but it was freaking Bo Jackson. You know what I mean? So we'll have to get Matt to call in one day and try to get him to tell that story.
Yeah, Dad tells the stories the best. I've heard some of the Auburn stories, you know, so many times, but they're awesome to listen to. Playing ping pong with Bo Jackson, those kind of things are really cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, he always tells them the best for sure. So I could probably tell you the story, but it just wouldn't be the same.
And what you mentioned about our podcast, it'll be a good idea to tell everyone. What it was we did a college football podcast for 2 years, two seasons, and we tried to fit it into an hour, and we would pick the best games of the week. We would break down what happened the week before in the games that we picked, and then we would break down what we thought would happen, like who would be impact players. And we would ultimately come up with our picks at the end of the podcast, and when we got done picking, we kept score at the end of every year, and you know, to kind of see who was crowned. But this year, since we have our own radio show, we're gonna do the same thing. We're gonna have our picks. We have to change up the format a little bit because we did our podcast in the middle of the week, so we had enough time to recap and enough time to get into the next week. But we're doing a show on Saturday mornings now, so we're pretty much pregame. You know what I mean? So we won't be able to recap as much because you'll get that all week long. But we will be able to give you, you know, a good pregame right up until kickoff, which is a big added bonus. But at the end of the year, we got to step it up a little bit this year. We have our own radio show now. It's not a podcast. So at the end of the year, I think the champ's going to need a trophy. We're going to have to make a trophy, and the champ's going to have to get a trophy.
Yeah, I think that we do definitely need a trophy. I think that sounds like a great idea because I think the first year that we did it, I think I got you in college, because we picked some NFL games too, kind of mixed it in. But I think I got to college the first year, and then last year you got me back. So
and they both came down to like one or two games.
Yeah, just the very end, we were back and forth all year, and then we had a couple weeks where, you know, somebody looks like they're getting a little bit of an edge with a few pick lead, and then all of a sudden the next week it's totally flip flopped. And I always remember I had a legal pad, just a yellow legal pad that I would write on, and I'd handwritten, you know, wrote everything down. I would circle the team that I picked, and then if we picked differently, I'd put a star next to the game. And it was always intense when I could star like four or five games in the same week.
It was rare that happened, but when it happened, it was pretty intense. And
absolutely, it was.
This year, like we said, it's our own radio show, so we have a chance to be interactive with everybody. So you can reach out on Twitter at TonyMacUMP, at @Atrip_tennis.
I actually changed it this morning because I was working on our show handle for Tony Mac and the Triplet, and I was like, you know, it's about time. It's still Atrip Tennis, but it's just Atrip Tennis with no underscore, no capital letters, one word, lowercase. So it's not hard to explain, because we butchered that several times last year.
You are not kidding. And the best way to get a hold of us would be follow the show's Twitter, Tony Mac and the Triplet, at Tony Mac Triplet. Be the best way. Tony Mack, you know how to spell my name. Triplet, TRIPLETT, all one word, at Tony Mack Triplet. Get in. You can even help us design our trophy if you'd like. You can, every week when we give you our picks, you can give us your picks, and you can keep score right along with us. We'll post scores. It'll be great. It's going to be fantastic. Of course, you guys know you can always call 866-485-9867 to get in with me and Aaron if you'd like. If some of you guys are on your way to work maybe on this early Saturday, or you're listening to work, get in. We'd love to hear from you. Tweet at us. Be great. Well, we're going to start before we get into it. We're going to talk about the coaches poll that's come out, the Deshaun Hand situation, maybe some big games that are coming up for the SEC non-conference games. A lot of those, Bama, Florida State, Michigan, Florida. A lot of really interesting games. We're going to get all that first. But yesterday, if you guys were listening to the Tom Abraham Show, I brought something up at the end of the show, and I mentioned that a friend of mine was the reason for it. And it was Aaron. Aaron found something on Twitter that was asking about your five favorite sports memories. And you said it could include like nostalgia and personal, you know, feelings into the game.
However you felt after any sort of sports-related event. One of my actual – a guy I went to high school with, I saw his – it was actually his tweet that brought me to this guy who tweeted out the whole idea. And he said that his favorite was when he watched Chipper Jones retire. He was a big baseball fan. So he said his was watching when Chipper Jones retired. So that really didn't have anything to do with an actual game, but it just how it made you feel.
The most interesting part about this list, which we can make one here in a moment, but was that you brought up, someone else in our group brought up afterwards, five most painful sports memories. And to me, I had way more painful memories than I did, you know, favorite positive memories. And I guess mainly because, you know, any team that you pull for when you're a major sports fan, ultimate goal is a championship. And if anything disrupts that, there's hard feelings towards that moment, which hinders a favorite sports memory and most likely creates a most painful one. So we can get into both of those lists.
A lot of times, and you talk, people will talk about it on, you know, major, on ESPN and all that stuff. Sometimes the losses hurt more than the wins make you excited. And it's true. And you hate that about sports, but it does that to you as a fan.
In my case, I absolutely agree. I think the losses sting way, way more because I remember them more, honestly. But let's go ahead and get into it. Give me your five favorite sports memories. It's a good way to everybody to get to know you a little bit more. I dropped some yesterday on Tom's show, but I didn't really put them in order or anything. I just named a couple. But give me Aaron Triplett's five favorite sports memories growing up.
All right, I'm going to start from the bottom. I'm going to start at number five and go up. If you know me, I'm a big LeBron James fan. You either love LeBron or you hate LeBron. There's not many, not much in between with LeBron James. But my number five is his block from Game 7 of the NBA Finals, not this past year, but the year before when the Cavs beat Golden State in 7. My number four was this past January, this year, when Roger Federer won the Australian Open, his first major title since 2012. I'm a tennis player. I've been one since I was, you know, 13 years old. I'm a huge Federer fan. After he won that match, epic five-setter against Nadal, we stayed up. My brother and I and another one of our friends stayed up. We watched it at 2:30 in the morning all the way till about 6:30 in the morning. And when he won and it was five sets, when he won the match, I was almost moved to tears. I'm pretty sure that I may have cried just a little bit.
Wow. But, see, I don't think I've ever been that into a sport where it'll make me cry for a win. Now, I've been crushed almost to tears before, and I'll get into that one. But wow, I mean that says a lot.
It just says a lot about me and my brother both. A lot of love for Federer. We think he's not only the greatest tennis player ever, but an upstanding individual also. So it was good to see him back. You know, he's about to be 36 years old. It was big for him to come back and win that after coming back from an injury. But so moving up to number three. This goes back to basketball. We're all about football, but I promise you it's coming in the top two. Third was when Ray Allen, in Game 6 of the NBA Finals, when the Heat were playing the Spurs. Heat were down 2-3 in the series, trying to force Game 7 at home. LeBron missed a three. You know, Bosch got the rebound, kicked it back out, and Ray Allen hit just the most clutch shot I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
That one was,
from the corner.
It wasn't one of my painful ones, but it was painful to see because I'm a Celtic fan, and Reno Ray Allen left and immediately became an impact for the Heat. That sucked. But now, I'm curious. The fact that LeBron's block, we haven't finished your list, but the fact that LeBron's block is up there, and I don't think Kyrie's shot is that because you're just so much of a LeBron fan? Because I would argue that the shot was better.
Yes, and I actually debated Kyrie's shot it was on my list. I had it on my list, and I was thinking, well, I mean, two from the same game, and I went with, because after when the Warriors went on that fast break, if they would have scored or hit an and one or something, that they probably, because I think they would have gone up about 4 points with under a minute to go, and it would have been tough, because then Kyrie wouldn't have been able to hit that shot at the end.
I think Kyrie was going to hit that shot regardless, but I was just wondering.
But I think the game was still tied. But
it
it would have really swung the momentum if they'd have been able to score on that fast break. I really think it was a big momentum change, and I didn't think he was going to get there. If you watch the replay, if you've ever seen LeBron, people say LeBron never goes full speed. That's one of the times that you see it, and it was amazing. You say that Kyrie's shot's not in there. I thought about it. I did. And I think it does have something to do with my LeBron fandom, for sure.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and continue your list. Sorry to interrupt. Continue, please.
That's fine. Well, my number two, now we're getting into some college football. Now, my number two is Auburn's national championship game win over Oregon from 2010-2011. People expect, you know, how many points are these teams going to score? Are they going to score 80 points combined? Well, the teams only combined for just over 40 points.
Now, there's only room for one more on your list. You're leaving out the comeback.
I am, and
I'm Auburn fans already.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
They're on you, man.
And I think about that was on my list, too.
And see, you have way more positive memories than I do. It was tough for me to make a favorite five just because I have a lot of positive memories, but none of them were, like, so climactic that they were that awesome. Like, you guys had the kick six. You had a national championship win in recent memory, the comeback. So it's very lucky for you. I mean, you're such a diehard LeBron fan that you got that moment. I'm a Celtic fan. I really haven't had that moment since 08. That was a good one. You know what I mean? Like, none of it was dramatic. The closeout game, the Celtics beat the Lakers, it was a 39-point game. You know what I mean? That was fun, but by halftime, I'm like, okay, well, this is a championship. Awesome. Didn't have that climactic moment in the game, which I'm very jealous of Auburn because of that.
And you're right about the comeback, and I have the national championship game against Oregon on here and how I felt at the end of that game because I remember it. But I think a lot of things that happened on my list, at least the last two, or my number four and five, like, happened within the past, you know, year. And I think that it also helps when things like that happen in recent memory because that's what you remember recently. It's difficult and I obviously remember thinking back on the 28-27 game, and I was going to live off that for the rest of my life. But other things actually happened. And I remember – I don't exactly remember how I felt in the moment after – I think what I felt more at the end of that game was I was happy and I was glad that Alabama had just blown a 24-0 lead. But Auburn was actually, you know, I think Alabama might have been favored by like a point. But either way, the spread was a point and Auburn was undefeated. I was more relieved, I think, than anything. And that's why I left the prayer at Jordan-Hare against Georgia from 2013 off the list, because that was pure joy. But also at the same time, that was relief. Because Auburn was about to blow the chance at the end after they blew a huge lead against a average Georgia team, which Aaron Murray about single-handedly led back.
And that would have made the Iron Bowl coming up a little more not have that much sting on it. Because yeah, Auburn would have had a chance to keep Bama out of a maybe keep them out of a national championship, but probably not because they beat them. Bama still goes to the SEC. Bama would have clinched
with
the West with Auburn losing. So Bama might lose to Auburn, but it's not going to mean anything. They're going to go smash the crap out of Missouri and move on to the championship game. So the fact that they beat Georgia and kind of in that kind of exhale of a game, that's what moved into the kick six and moved that aura around the game going into that game. One versus four, it's championship or bust right now.
This list was difficult because I tried to make it less about – I tried to make it more about, like, jubilee and joy and just overwhelming, you know, just excitement over, like, was that joy or was that relief? Was I more relieved? Because that's another thing about sports it does to fans is you become relieved when something happens more so than happy. And so that's where I crossed some of them off the list when I felt like I felt more relieved than I did pure joy. And pure joy is number one, which is the kick six. I remember Shocker. Exactly what happened. I remember exactly how I felt. I jumped in our pool in the backyard. It was freezing cold because it was the last weekend in November. But I didn't care at the time. I think that my whole family, other than my mom, did. Even my dad. And we just came back inside freezing. The floor is soaking wet. We got towels. We're just literally everybody's got a smile on their face and they're laughing. Like, my dad is laughing. Like, he's just in utter, like, just joy. He's got this. I've never seen. I can remember exactly what my dad looked like after we jumped in the pool, got back out, and we're watching the end of the game, just the wrap up. And I actually remember during the play while it was happening, I saw him catch the ball and I was like, okay, we're going to overtime. And then he gets to the outside and he gets around the edge.
He stepped out of bounds.
And I thought he was going to too, exactly. And so he kept going and we're like yelling, everybody's yelling in my house and it's just my immediate family right there with me. And then he's about to score and we're all crowd the TV and I'm putting my arms out and like, wait, shh. Like, because I was just waiting for a flag or something to be wrong.
I was waiting for a review.
Yeah, I was waiting for something to happen that was going to throw it off. So, and then when nothing happened and everybody started walking onto the field, that's when I went just absolutely crazy.
The moment I realized
the chaos ensued.
The moment I realized it was over and there wasn't going to be a review is when they showed AJ McGarren kiss his mom and go back to the locker room. That's when I knew it was over. That's a good list. I'll go through mine really quickly. It's not in any particular order, because I didn't really put too much thought into that. Just moments that made me feel really good. Obviously, the Music City Miracles up there. That ended horribly for the Titans afterwards, but that's up there.
You've probably got that same Titans season, you've probably got it in your most favorite and your least favorite.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
In the list.
You're exactly right. That's number two on my least favorite. I'll get to that in just a second, because we'll have to get a break soon, but... So, the Music City Miracle, obviously, one of the top 10 best sports calls ever, Mike Keith. And then, oh my goodness, I was at the Sugar Bowl when Oklahoma beat Alabama. I was there. That was incredible to be there around. I mean, there was a lot of Oklahoma fans travel well. They're a good historic program, but let me tell you something. It was, if anybody tries to tell you it was even in that stadium, you're wrong, because it was at the end when all the Bama fans left, but... It was slam-packed with Alabama fans, and I was one lone Oklahoma fan in my section. And that was just pure joy. Another one, and I'm not even a fan. It was just that I disliked another team so much that I became a fan. And now they're a team I like to pull for, mainly because they're in that team's division that I don't like. And that's the Red Sox 0-4 when they beat the Yankees. They came back, and the ALCS down 3-0. That was just the epitome of sports to me. Like, just being a kid, knowing that everything's over with. You know what I mean? Like, your day's over. Everybody's supposed to be in bed. It's not a routine thing to be up that late watching a baseball game. It's like this extra thing where you know everybody's eyes are on this game. You're included with everybody. This was really before social media really took off. You just have this feeling that everybody's watching this game, and you're included with everybody watching this game, and you got to see something special 4 nights in a row. And the majority of those games came down to David Ortiz coming up clutch or someone else coming up clutch, and I think game seven was a blowout. But that feeling just epitomized sports for me. That was amazing. And now I'm going to go through my bottom five real quick, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and get into the top 25. But my bottom five. Worst. My top five most painful. I'll start at the top. I mean, it's just everybody that knows I'm an Oklahoma fan should know that it's the Boise State Fiesta Bowl, 06, 06, 07. That was miserable. That game was over with. Boise State was kicking the crap out of Oklahoma, wiping the floor with them. It was over with. Oklahoma storms back with just a little over a minute left. Jared Zebranski throws a pick six. Jared Zebranski throws the game away. Oklahoma goes and scores. Goes up 35-28, ball game. It's over with. And then, of course, the moment kicks in that everybody remembers, the hook and ladder, and then the play that scored him the touchdown in overtime, and then the Statue of Liberty to win the game. But a lot of people forget that Jared Zebranski threw a pick six to lose that game with just under a minute left, and that stings knowing that the game should have been over with there. Peterson's first game back, he finally looked like Adrian Peterson. Overtime, it was one play. Oklahoma ran one play, and it was a 25-yard touchdown to Peterson. So that one stings. The Rams-Titans Super Bowl, 1 yard short. That was awful. The Oklahoma-Kansas State game in 2012 is up there because that's my only trip ever to Norman, and they lost. But I got to see Sterling Shepard breakout. So there's three of them. The other two really don't matter. Those three are just above everything else. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Aaron and I are going to jump into this coaches poll. We're going to tell you who we think belongs there, who we think maybe is a little overrated, and we'll tell you why. And that's all coming up next. Tony Mack and the Triplett, first episode. Thank you all for listening. Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump.
Sports Radio, The Ump, because we care.
Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplett during the break. We're going to get into the coaches poll in just a second. I do promise you that. But during the break, a good friend of ours tweeted into the show, big-time Bama fan. He says, when you're excited for your best friend's radio show, but you have to listen to a Kick Six rant in the first segment. Come on, you had to know it was coming. We had to introduce our friend Aaron, one of your best friends. So you had to know we had to talk about that background. But Aaron is going to make everything right.
I'm going to make it up to you because I'm going to bring up my most heartbreaking sports moment as a sports fan. And it happened in that same season, the national championship game against Florida State. Auburn jumped out to a lead. But Florida State, very good team that year, the best all season, came back. And it was a fantastic game from if you're a spectator of the sport of football. It was a fantastic football game. But at the end, you know, Kelvin Benjamin made the catch over Chris Davis, and Auburn ended up losing in heartbreaking fashion. And I was – first it was anger, and then I was so angry. I don't think I've ever been so angry after a game. And then it went into a depression stage.
If any of you – like when he talked about Federer winning and him crying, like actually shedding tears – If you ever want to know how emotional he gets in sports, just listen to what he's about to tell you. What happened after this national championship?
This is a funny yet very sad story.
No, it's hilarious.
Funny. It's funny to think about. But so the first stage was definitely anger, scary anger probably is the best way to put it. And then came depression because the next day I didn't get out of bed. I got out of bed to use the restroom and to get food. And when I got my food, I brought it back to my bed. And I stayed there for an entire day. And I deleted every social media and sports app on my phone so I didn't have to get any kind of, like, knowledge of that it happened. So that was my most heartbreaking sports moment. And it could probably account for all five of the slots if we were to go into all five. But so
he was so upset, so depressed. He spent days in his room.
It was really an entire – the first day after the – so it was Tuesday. It was the entire day I spent in bed for the most part. And so, then the next day it was about half a day. But
yeah. So I'm saying – I'm guessing you could say you were pretty numb afterwards because of the last-minute drive and everything. Well, I'm sure our friend Jordan can sympathize with you because, you know, Clemson did beat them with 1 second left, so –
I'm sure
he knows the feeling.
But you know, a lot can happen in 1 second if there's one second left on the clock.
You know, I think I want to say someone like some Auburn fan that flipped to an Alabama fan or some Alabama fan that flipped to an Auburn fan got that tattooed on her somewhere. And like Tom Abraham said, that's not something you want to tattoo on yourself. A lot can happen in 1 second. It only takes 1 second. That's not the best tattoo to get, especially if I'm like your fiance, your boyfriend. I'm not okay with that.
Yeah, that's not good advertising.
Exactly. Well, maybe that's the point. Maybe they're trying to get you to stay. So you don't want him. You don't read the tattoo. But all right, so we're going to jump into this coach's poll now. All right. We've got the past in the past. Well, maybe not. I love bringing up the past, especially. I'm sorry, guys, but especially if it has to do with the Bama loss, I love bringing it up. So there'll probably be a lot of that to happen. So you better hope you don't lose this year. But we're going to jump into this coach's poll, and we're going to tell you who we think might be a little overrated, who might be a little underrated, who just doesn't deserve to be in there. And we're going to start at number one with Alabama. Obviously, that's where they belong. They need to stay there. I mean, do we have any objections about that?
Absolutely none. Really, I have no objections with the entire top four, really. Yeah. I think it's pretty spot on.
They're the definition of reload. You don't rebuild, you reload. Ohio State, they've got Tyquan Lewis on the defensive line, and he's fantastic. I think he'll be a force this year. That whole defensive line is going to be very good. They're led by Tyquan Lewis. JT Barrett, he kind of got exposed a little bit as a passer downfield last year, but I really think they brought in Kevin Wilson, who coached two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks in Sam Bradford and Jason White at Oklahoma. So I think they're going to be okay there, and I think White will improve. Or I think, not White, but I think Barrett will improve. I hope he improves sometime.
And I think Mike Weber is going to have a much bigger – I mean, true freshman running back.
He was a 1,000-yard running back last year.
1,000-yard rusher last year. I think he's obviously going to be even better this year. Yeah. So
Most people heard about Curtis Samuel mainly because he was a good threat receiving out of the backfield too.
He was kind of a hybrid. He played a lot of receiver and a lot of running back. So they'll miss him a lot, but I mean, they're – Ohio State and Alabama have the two best coaches in the game, and they reload. You're right. They don't rebuild. They reload, and they're always going to be top four teams.
I think Florida State's going to be pretty good. If they make the playoffs, I think I might be a little surprised. I don't think they're amazing. I mean, they're defensively. Derwin James is one of the hardest hitting safeties we've seen in a long time. And you've got Tavares McFadden, very good cornerback. Their secondary is going to give Jalen Hurts and them fits. But the problem is, I think Bama's just going to be able to run the ball at will, especially late in the game. So I really don't think you're going to see them add too much effect that late, and I think Bama will be able to pull away. But I think Florida State thrives in the sense that they return a very good quarterback in a league that Clemson just won, and Clemson just got wiped out. You know what I mean? So I think Florida State's in the best situation. Virginia Tech just lost a quarterback. Miami, didn't they just lose their quarterback?
Yeah, they did. And Florida State's in the best. I mean, I read that they said they were bringing back like 25 starters, which obviously, if you know football, is not mathematically correct. But since you only have 22 starters. But I think what they meant by that was they had 25 guys coming back who either started or heavily contributed on both sides of the ball.
It's okay. Les Miles once said that he thought the SEC should have 25 teams ranked in the top 25. So, I mean, we know football, not a lot, not everybody understands math. It's okay.
But, I mean, Florida State, they bring back, they're loaded with talent. Jimbo Fisher always loads up with talent. And while I don't think of Jimbo Fisher as the greatest coach, I think he's a good players coach. I think he's a good recruiter. X's and O's wise, I'm not high on him, but I think he does a good job. And I think the ACC, outside of Clemson and Florida State, within the past few years has been very, very weak. They're a good – and then you had Louisville came onto the scene last year as a very good team, but they haven't had, other than those three teams last year and the few years before that.
I think Louisville will be a lot better this year. I do. I think they're going to be the team that gives Florida State the run in long term, as far as all season long being there. Like, if Florida State happens to slip up in a week, they're going to be that team that might take control of the one spot in that division and not let go. But as far I think Clemson, just because of the rivalry that's become, I think that's going to be the game that might trip them up. But Florida State, the best part about their situation is Jimbo Fisher brings back not only a starting quarterback in DeAndre Francois. He's not the best. I mean, he's getting better, but the best part about him is how tough he is. I think next to Sean White, he's the toughest quarterback in the country. There were two games last year against Clemson and Miami where he shouldn't have been able to be in the game. He couldn't move his shoulder. And he came in and not only continued to play, he was effective. He went down and almost won the game against Clemson, and he went down and beat Miami. And with an injury he probably shouldn't have even been on the field for. So he's extremely tough, but he's smart. I mean, he doesn't have the best stats all the time. I think against Michigan in their bowl game, he was like 9 of 27
He's not your prototypical quarterback, and I was just about to say, he's not somebody who's going to blow up the stat sheet. He's not going to, you know, you hand him the ball, say, go beat somebody on a game-winning drive. He might do it, but really what he is, he's a gamer. He loves to play. He's one of those guys, at least I saw last year, and he was only a redshirt freshman, so he's just going to get better. But just one of those guys that thrives when the lights come on in a big game. He's not the most talented, at least at the quarterback position, good athlete. Nick Marshall was very – he's obviously not the athlete, the quick athlete that Nick Marshall was, but Nick Marshall wasn't – I mean, he's obviously not a quarterback.
Yeah.
But he was a gamer. He played well with the lights on, and he was good at what he did. And so that's what I think about Francois. Like, he's a guy that you're comfortable giving the keys to on a big Saturday night game. He's gonna play his best for you. So that's how I feel about him. And that's why I think they've got a chance, I mean, to make obviously go to the playoff, because not only is the ACC – well, Clemson's not what they have been in recent memory, but – and they get a lot of – I mean, other than their opening week game, I feel like they have a favorable look at the schedule. They do go on the road to Clemson, but they get Louisville at home. So,
you're okay with the top four, obviously. USC, I'm okay with them being there for now. I don't think they stay there. I think Washington might end up getting them this year in a little bit of a revenge game for last year. But I think ultimately USC and Clay Helton, it's Clay Helton.
Right? It is Clay Helton. And I was questionable about his hiring, because there's no, a lot of he was the interim, and then he got hired, and people say, well, you know, there's no one else for them to hire, so they just hired their interim because he did a decent job. And I think he's done well, and USC's always going to recruit good players. And if they get a good coach that can Well, manage those players. They'll have a good team. And Sam Darnold is going to be the first pick in the draft this year. So,
and I think USC will probably be there at the end of the year as a old BCS game kind of team, New Year's Six kind of team. But I think that Washington's probably going to have their number this year. Stanford seems to always have their number, so that'll be a good game. There's a lot of games on that schedule that I can kind of question and say, well, I'm not sure here. Well, I obviously know you have the talent here, but this might come down to coaching, and I still don't think that he's really proven much for me. So I've got my questions about USC, but the biggest question mark for me automatically is right off the top, number five, Clemson. I don't get it. I think that's too high, and here's why. Now, something I've said about Oklahoma that applies to Clemson here, especially in their receiving core, they're not necessarily replacing talent. They're replacing experience because they've got the talent there. Deion Kane, they've got two or three receivers, I think, this year that had 700 yards last year because that offense was so prolific that everybody was getting involved. Deion Kane's probably going to be a big-time threat for that offense, but the biggest question mark is, number one, they don't return a starting quarterback. They're going to have an inexperienced quarterback, but they're also replacing one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen in college football. And that's going to take some time. Defensively, sure, Dexter Lawrence, he's really good at the defensive line. He'll be able to disrupt the passing game. But here's the thing. Last year, the team that lost everything in Clemson this year, but they had all that last year. Their offense didn't get going last year. Auburn, as bad as they were offensively, as especially inconsistent, they had a chance to win that football game last year. And I think they've fixed their quarterback problem in a big way. A lot of people disagree, but I think Auburn's going to go on the road week two and beat Clemson. And I'm very, very confident about that. There's a couple games I'm pretty confident about the outcome. I'm confident about that. I'm confident Bama's going to beat Florida State week one. But Clemson's my first overrated team. Do they deserve to be in the top 25? Absolutely. Very good defense. A lot of good pieces coming back offensively. But when you're replacing the most important position in football, you can't put a team like that in the top five. You're setting them up for failure.
I do want to mention USC because we hit on them for a second. They actually don't play Washington in the regular season this year. If they play Washington, it'll be in the Pac-12 championship game.
Okay.
And USC's schedule, just looking at it, it's very favorable because they open with Western Michigan, which is their only supposed gimme game. And then they get Stanford the second week. And we've talked about how Stanford is sometimes their Achilles heel and has been in the past. But they get Stanford early. Stanford's dangerous late in the season under David Shaw statistically and historically. And then they get Texas week three. And then really their toughest game down the stretch is on the road against Notre Dame on October 21st, and then they go to Colorado, who, if they're anything like they were last year, it's going to be a formidable opponent. So we'll see. But I think USC's schedule is favorable so far, or from the looks of it right now. But now, switching gears to Clemson, I agree with you. It is surprising that they are ranked this high, considering what they lost. They brought back a lot of good pieces, but they lose not only to Deshaun Watson, who, in my opinion, is one of the three best players that we've seen since the turn of the century, along with Vince Young and Cam Newton. Those three guys could do things that nobody else has been able to do, and do it on the biggest stages in the country. But they also lose Ben Boulware on defense, who was a really – not only, I mean, he was a solid,
wasn't
really
the
good
best athletic.
Wasn't the best
saying, was
athletic
smart
guy. He was smart. He played his ex. He had really good football IQ, and he was the leader of that defense, the emotional leader of that defense. And it's hard to replace those emotional, influential leaders on your team like him. So I think they're going to miss him, and just with inexperience at quarterback, and they lost Wayne Gallman too, 1,000-yard rusher for a few straight seasons. I think that five is too high for Clemson. I think that Dabo Swinney's kind of built a culture at Clemson, but I think that this year is going to tell a lot about the culture that he has built. Does it have lasting power as one of these dynasties that we see like Alabama, Ohio State, and Florida State, which those, especially Alabama, but also Ohio State, and to some extent Florida State, are this kind of the three teams you look at when you're talking about modern dynasties in college football.
Yeah, and to your point about USC and Stanford, since 2012, they've played one game that wasn't early in the season. It was 2013. So in 2012, 2014, 15, and last year, they played week three. And I know you said Stanford's deadly towards the end of the year statistically, but not for USC because USC early in the season, struggles with Stanford. 2012, they lost to Stanford week three. 2014, I think, was the only year they played them early. They beat them 13-10. I remember that. That was thrilling. 2015, Stanford beat them 41-31 week three. And then last year, Stanford upended them 27-10. So USC struggles with Stanford. They're going to get them early where they struggle the most. But lucky for them, they lost Christian McCaffrey, Mr. Everything. You know what I mean? So it might
struggle at times last year anyway with him on the field.
It's because it was all they had. They were breaking in a new quarterback.
It's gonna be interesting to see how Stanford is this year. But so we'll move on to I'm gonna talk about what I think is the next overhead team, and it's Penn State.
We can get
Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump.
Welcome back, everybody. Tony back in the triplet. We left you with talking about some of our most overrated teams in the coaches poll, which there are quite a few. The one we started with, I nitpicked at USC, but I did say I'm okay with them being there. I don't think they'll finish the season there, but I'm totally okay with them being there. Clemson was the first one we talked about, the only one so far. But at number six, Aaron sees, you said you saw Penn State?
Penn State, I mean, they're solely getting ranked off of how they finished a year ago with the Big Ten championship game. And I just – their schedule is – they have a rougher schedule this year.
They do.
Than they did last year. Let me pull it up.
They have such a tough stretch. And I don't think Minnesota for teams like Penn State, I think Ohio State will be able to run over Minnesota and stuff. But with P.J. Fleck there, I think Penn State's one of those teams that is susceptible to being upset by a team like Minnesota. But remember, Pitt beat them last year, and they have them second week of the season, and then they have this three-game stretch, 3 weeks in a row, where they have Michigan at home. They have to go to Ohio State and to Michigan State.
That's part of – then they – on September 23rd, they go to Iowa, which Iowa upset Michigan last year. But I'm going to circle a trap game for Penn State, which it's probably not going to be, but it's – Saturday, October 7th, they go to Northwestern at 11 a.m. in what I call a Big Ten snooze. It'll be on ESPN2, and it will make you fall asleep. If you're looking for nap time on that day, turn it to ESPN2 and watch Northwestern at home against Penn State. So, and that's just one of those that'll lull you to sleep, and I could see Penn State particularly not playing well on that day. But then you're right. The next 3 weeks, they get Michigan at home. They go to Ohio State, and they go to Michigan State, which they're losing two of those three games.
I'm right there with you, and I think the two they lose are both on the road.
I agree.
I think they beat Michigan in the revenge game because Michigan not only beat them, Michigan embarrassed them last year.
Yeah, Michigan embarrassed Penn State last year, but who knows? I mean, Jim Harbaugh, I think, is one of the best coaches in the country, and of course, James Franklin's got Penn State going in the right direction for sure, but being at number six is very – I think it's a little premature. I think they are probably worthy of a top 10, but maybe more like number 9 I could foresee because they're ranked ahead of Washington and Oklahoma. They're ranked ahead of Michigan.
And Washington returns a lot of good skill players there.
They were a playoff team. Oklahoma returns Baker Mayfield there. And with the new coach – which I think Lincoln Riley is going to do just fine. He's got a great quarterback to lean on this year, but he's going to miss D.D. Westbrook because we talked about – actually, I brought it up last year, and you thought it was a good point how he was going to miss Sterling Shepard last year, and he did for a little while until Westbrook stepped up, but now he's going to miss Westbrook. So they're going to need another receiver to step up, play well, and they're going to miss Piron and Mixon out of the backfield. They're not going to have – I mean, I think they're going to be fine, but there's some questions there that I have.
And I can agree with you, but that's where I was saying where I compared them to Clemson, that they're not really replacing talent, they're replacing experience because the talent that Oklahoma has coming in their backfield this year, they've got Rodney Anderson, who's been on the roster for 2 years, but he's been hurt. Last year, Lincoln Riley said he was the most explosive back on the roster before he got hurt, and that included Joe Mixon and Piron. So that's a lot of high praise. Abdul Adams was a true freshman last year who played in the Iowa State game when Piron was hurt and Mixon was suspended. They have a JUCO transfer, Marcellus Sutton, who got a lot of playing time in the spring, and they bring in two freshman running backs that were four-star recruits. So they've got the talent there, and they have one of the best offensive lines in the country, and they're deep in that position as well with two offensive linemen who were starters last year, both got hurt in the Ohio State game, lost their starting jobs to their backups. And now those guys are permanent backups this year. So they're very deep at the offensive line position. So me and you could go back there and probably run for about 800 yards a season combined. So imagine what they're going to be able to do. Receiving-wise, they lose Westbrook, but Westbrook would have come in and made an impact immediately last year, but he was playing about 60% on a hamstring injury the first couple games of the season. But Oklahoma's got a wide variety this year. Lincoln Riley said that this is the deepest that position's been since he's been at Oklahoma. You've got two really tall 6'4", 6'5", guys in Jeffrey Meade and A.D. Miller, who are both juniors and seniors. They've been there a while. And then you've got the number one JUCO transfer, and you got a guy named Dahu Green who's been there a while too, but he's scarcely used. He's really tall as well. So you got big, tall red zone targets. Jeffrey Meade, I don't know if you remember, you probably try to forget it, but it was in the Sugar Bowl. He made a couple really tough catches against Auburn. And then you've got this Marquise Brown guy who was the number one JUCO receiver, transferred to Oklahoma. He's supposed to have D.D. Westbrook's speed. So I think they're going to be okay. They still have one of the best receiving tight ends in the country in Mark Andrews. The biggest question mark at Oklahoma is still going to be defense, but I don't think that offense skips a beat. I think they get overlooked, and that's why I think they go on their own and beat Ohio State week two. I think that's Ohio State's only loss in the season, but up until they get to the playoffs. But I think Oklahoma's going to go on the road and beat Ohio State. And I'm not trying to be a homer, because last year on our podcast, I picked Ohio State to beat Oklahoma by 18 points. We picked scores, and I picked them to beat them by 18. And Ohio State either beat them by like 18 or just a little more than that. So I'm not being a homer. I truly think that, and I've got reasons to back it up.
And I think that 7, 8, 9, Washington, Oklahoma, Michigan in that order is pretty spot on. I can agree with that. I remember last year at the beginning of the season, Washington, they were ranked like 14 or something, just what felt like ridiculous. And we bagged on Washington so much. And then all they did was they kept winning, and they kept winning. And it was, to me, I found myself rooting against Washington all season long because I wanted to be right. I find myself doing that a lot. When I get something fixated in my head, like a prediction or just an idea, I root against a team or against a coach because I want to be right about it. But Washington proved me wrong last year because I was a hater. I was a naysayer, and they came out, had a strong season. So I think they're right where they should be at about 7. The next head-scratcher to me is at number 10 with Wisconsin.
Like, see, I'm pretty surprised, and I'm shocked there too, but I'm pretty surprised that you're okay with Michigan at 9.
I think that that's just because of my typical respect for Jim Harbaugh, I think, because it's just one of those – I feel like they're becoming one of those teams that's going to reload. But, I mean, I guess they could be – they wouldn't be any higher than 9 to me, but they're just fine right there. But Wisconsin Vegas, stands out to me.
Vegas is showing them a lot of disrespect. Vegas has their you can go over or under their win total. Vegas has them at 8.5, which is rough. And they have Wisconsin at 10.5. But we'll get to all that the next hour. Tony Mack and the Triplett Show right here, Sports Radio, 730, 103.9 at The Ump.
Marcus Mariota is back, and the NFL should take notice.
Mariota, the young maestro!
An ever-improving roster has the Titans poised to make their next move. Don't miss a minute of the action. From the power run game to the aerial attack and the 3-4 defense, the Titans are on the move. And you can hear them every game day right here on Titans Radio.
On Sports Radio 730 and 103.9, The Ump. It's Tony Mack and the Triplett with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want. Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplet, hour number two of our first show. Fantastic. I know we're going to be here through football season, hopefully a lot longer than that. So you're going to hear a majority of football talk from now until probably February. So, but don't worry. I mean, we know a lot about plenty of other sports. It's not just going to be a one-year thing, once a year kind of deal like it was with our podcast. We're really hoping to continue this deal. So hope you guys are enjoying. But we left off with talking about some of the overrated teams in the poll. But another thing that I noticed, the first thing I wanted to point out in that poll was how overrated some of the top 10 teams were, and you can nitpick at those. But the other thing I have the biggest problem with is you got Alabama at number one, and the next SEC team is 12. While I think they got that team wrong, I think it should have been Auburn. It should have flip-flopped. LSU, I don't think, is better than Auburn, at least on paper right now, and that's all we can really base it off of. I don't think at the end of the season you're going to be able to say that there are 11 teams between the best SEC team and the next best SEC team. I think they got that wrong altogether. I mean, the SEC last year wasn't the best conference in the country. You can freak out all you want to, scream, tell me I messed up, but it's just true. I mean, they weren't, but it doesn't. That could be the anomaly. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean that's going to start happening every year. The ACC was fantastic last year, but look what the ACC lost this year. Don't think they're going to quite be up to standard. They might have a playoff team, but their conference isn't going to be as good. Like, I think they had three teams in the regular season win 9 games over the SEC. Three: Florida State, Clemson, and Georgia Tech. And then a couple of those teams, I think Georgia Tech might have won one in a bowl game. But the ACC dominated the SEC last year. There you go. But that doesn't mean the SEC is not still the king of the hill. I think last year was an anomaly. I think the SEC is going to be back. You had every team minus Bama have at least 4 losses last year. Every single one of them. Don't necessarily think that's the case this year. And I think that was my biggest gripe. They got that wrong. SEC still had 6 teams in the top 25. But you're telling me there's 11 teams better than Auburn? I think towards the end of the year, maybe mid-season, especially after Auburn goes on the road to Clemson, I think you guys are going to be realizing they made a very big mistake.
Well, I think it shows the SEC, other than Alabama, was very down last year. And I think that's I think it's partially due to how good Alabama always is. You know, some people have said Alabama's killed the SEC, and it's partially true. I don't agree with it all. I think it's partially true for sure, because if you look at some of the coaches that have been hired, I mean, LSU hired Ed Orgeron, who I think is a great position coach, a great motivator, a great recruiter, but he obviously is not a great head coach because of what he did at Ole Miss. And nobody wants to come coach in that division. Because if Auburn were to fire Gus Malzahn or Texas A&M were to fire Kevin Sumlin, which I think that both those coaches are kind of on their last leg and have to have a good, strong season, who are you going to hire? Who's going to want to come coach in the SEC West?
And I think that's the best point you make, and I think that's the biggest way that Nick Saban has killed the SEC, and it's that all the great coaches that used to coach there that are gone because couldn't really compete with them anymore. Well, Urban Meyer's the exception. Urban Meyer lost 2 regular season games to him, I think, but beat him twice in the postseason, one of those that did Florida. So I don't really think that was the issue there. A lot of people say Meyer left because he couldn't compete with Saban, which I think is totally wrong. But there were other fantastic coaches there, like Mark Richt. And Mark Richt got fired from Georgia, left Georgia because Tim Wins wasn't good enough anymore because of Nick Saban.
And just think about this. In 2012, in the SEC championship game, Georgia was about 7 yards away from beating Alabama. If Mark Richt lets Aaron Murray spike the ball and they, for some reason, score on the last play of the game, Mark Richt is still at Georgia because they win that SEC championship game. They beat Notre Dame just like Alabama did, and they win a national championship, and Mark Richt's still at Georgia. It's a game of inches, or in that case, you know, 7 yards or whatever it was. But it has become to where, I mean, Alabama's going to win 11 games every season.
Yeah.
And now the rest of the SEC is settling for this. Oh, we're Auburn. We're 8-4. Let's go to the Sugar Bowl. We had a great season. We had a fantastic you won 8 games, and they looked pitiful. And then the worst last year was losing to Georgia 13-7 without Georgia. Georgia didn't even score an offensive touchdown.
And Sean White gifted that to him.
Sean White gift wrapped it on a platter, and then you can't pick up a first down in the second half. Are you kidding me? Gus Malzahn, offensive genius. And this is an angry fan tirade. Of course, then in the bowl game against Oklahoma, a team who gave up 1,000 yards to Patrick Mahomes. I think it was more like 800 and something. But either way, Gus Malzahn, offensive mastermind, couldn't solve a Big 12 defense in a bowl game. I digressed from the original point, but the SEC last year was down. I think that this year has it some chances, because they have a lot of teams ranked here from 12 to 16, you know, or LSU, Auburn, Georgia, and Florida, and then going down Tennessee at 24, but we'll get to Tennessee in a little bit. I think that Georgia's the best team in the East, but Florida, I think, is probably going to win the division. And Auburn, I think LSU is probably I don't know. I want to buy into Auburn. I want to buy into Stidham because I've heard good things. I've seen good things in the spring game. But that doesn't mean anything. And all these Auburn fans are buying into Stidham. And I shared a stat with you, Antonio, before – or not a stat, a something worth noting before we started the show today. And it was that ESPN ranked Jared Stidham the 22nd best player of 2017, ahead of players like Nick Chubb from Georgia, and ahead of seven spots ahead of Jalen Hurts. Seven. All Jalen Hurts did was win Offensive Player of the Year in the SEC as a freshman and lead his team to an undefeated season until he lost in the last second of the national championship game, a game where he played, you know, he had big shoes to step in. He didn't throw the ball that well, but he made a big play at the end to give him the lead, and you're ranked seven spots ahead of that guy? Are you kidding me? Yeah, that's a joke, in my opinion.
It is absolutely a joke, and I have a lot of high hopes for him, but you can't – that would be like saying Lincoln Riley is the best coach in the Big 12 just because of the talent that he's got coming back and everything. He hasn't proven anything yet. Jared Stidham's played a couple games
at
Baylor.
Played like six games and got hurt.
Exactly.
Six games and then went and – yeah, I don't get it.
And you were talking about how Saban's kind of killed the SEC, and I think it's finally starting to catch up to him in a certain way. Recruiting's been awful for Bama right now this year. I think they got two recruits in 2 days, the past couple days, but I think that only added up to like a total of nine. Now's the chance for the SEC to start jumping on some of these recruits and get some of them, because Bama's so loaded, a lot of these kids, it's hard to go over there now. You know what I mean? Like, well, I might finally play my senior year, but I don't want to play my senior year. I want to play, you know, all the time. So that might finally, the talent might finally be dispersed around.
I think last year they had a ESPN top recruit like gray shirt, couldn't get a scholarship until like the second semester or some kind of bizarre.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Now, I've got a gripe with you real quick, though.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
And that's the whole Sugar Bowl thing you were talking about. Gus Malzahn couldn't solve the Big 12, a Big 12 defense, this and that. Let me tell you something. First off, Patrick Mahomes, I think Texas Tech had 850-something total yards against Oklahoma. Patrick Mahomes had 819 of them. Patrick Mahomes, a lot of people don't realize this, and this is why Kingsbury's going to lose his job, and this is why they're going to win probably no more than three or four games this year. Patrick Mahomes had more total yards last year than Lamar Jackson. He had more touchdowns than Lamar Jackson. I think he had one more pick than Lamar Jackson. He was everything to that university. You know what I mean? Like, it's not his fault they didn't win these ball games. You can say what you want. He's got this raw NFL talent. It's going to take him a while to develop. But you can't go back and look at their record and say they lost because of Patrick Mahomes. He had more total yards than the Heisman Trophy winner, most of them passing. But still, he had two more total touchdowns than the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. That university's done. So right there, I'm going to stop you and say, couldn't solve a Big 12 defense. Couldn't solve a Big 12 offense either. Baker Mayfield threw for almost 300 yards, a couple touchdowns. Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine were running all day in that backfield. Combined, that Oklahoma ran for almost 230 yards in that game. So yeah, you couldn't stop. It couldn't solve a Big 12 defense to put up some points, but you couldn't stop that offense either. You couldn't tackle.
Couldn't stop and Oklahoma had a great offense. It was just like night and day with the offensive and defensive side of the ball. And Joe Mixon was just unbelievable in that game. And of course, I was real high. I think, regardless of what you think about Joe Mixon as a person, the kid can play football.
Absolutely.
And he's fast. He can catch. He does everything so well. And I knew that it was going to be a handful, especially when Auburn couldn't stay on the field offensively. But But the Big 12, I mean, of course, Texas Tech, you know, I think at Texas Tech they teach two-hand touch defense.
I'm not going to disagree there. But I'm gonna fast forward to the bottom of this top 25, and it's kind of weird. I guess I'm nitpicking a little, but there are some teams that the lower half of this ranking that I disagree with. I don't think they should be ranked at all, and that's Tennessee. Sorry, Tennessee. Butch Jones has shown his hand. And he will never win more than – and I said this on our podcast. I gave him the benefit of the doubt and said maybe 9. But I've stated several times that I don't think Butch Jones will ever be more than an 8-win, possibly one time a fluke 9-win regular season coach. And he's done nothing but prove me right every single year. Now, this would be the perfect opportunity for, let's say, Butch to get fired now that they got their new AD. You know, it would be a perfect fit to come in here and take over – because Butch does a very good job at recruiting. Someone who can come in there and get a good offensive coordinator, flip those recruits and turn them into develop the talent the way it's supposed to. Get Les Miles at Tennessee. Get Les Miles in that checkered orange and white, and let him go to work. And I guarantee you, in 3 years, they'll be in the SEC championship game. I promise you, they will with the talent they already have. Plus, on top of that, he can recruit. You think right now with the recruiting problems that Alabama has with having just too much talent there, Les can't go and grab some of that other talent?
And Les Miles was for the longest time the second best coach in the SEC. And I think that the way he went out was wrong. The end of the season, the year before last, and then the beginning of last year. I think Les is a great coach, but I think – and Tennessee should not be ranked. They lost a lot of talent. They lost Josh Dobbs, who was, in my opinion – they had a couple guys who I thought was really worth – you know, I thought Dobbs, great kid, good quarterback. Alvin Kamara, great great talent at running back. They had so much talent last year. And I had – when they hired Butch Jones, I'm like, this guy's a Band-Aid. We talk about he's one of those Band-Aid coaching hires that when you're paving the way for the next guy you're going to hire to lead your university, and they just won't get rid of him. And then finally, you know, he kept winning eight games, seven games, six games, you know, back and forth, this and that, you know. And then not last year, but the year before that, they went to Tuscaloosa and played Alabama in a heck of a game, had a chance to win. And Alabama, of course, went on to win the national championship that year. But Tennessee played a really, really good game and finished the season. After they lost that game, they won out. They won their bowl game. And they came into the next season, and I fell victim to the Tennessee bandwagon. And I had bagged on Tennessee for years, ever since Butch Jones got there. And then last year, I was like, okay, I'm going to buy Tennessee. I'm going to stick my entire limb out, and I'm going to say they're going to win the SEC. They're going to go to the playoff. I had them losing the first game. And then what did they do? They came out and did the same thing.
They could barely beat Appalachian State last year.
But the thing that they did was they started like 5 or 6-0, and then they lost in that heartbreaking game to Texas A&M. And then they went at home to Alabama and were just absolutely just destroyed. And it was – the wheels fell off from there. They lost to South Carolina a couple weeks later. So, yeah, I'm not going to fall victim to that bandwagon again, and I'm going to continue to make fun of Tennessee, back to the old ways.
Now, you brought up a term that a lot of people aren't familiar with. You brought up the Band-Aid term that we use. Something else that people are going to have to get accustomed to when we do this show is we have categories of coaches, and one of them is fireable. And that's going to be a term that is so used on this show. And that's because you can almost look at a coach sometimes and tell that they're fired. He's just got the look of a guy who's not going to do very well. Butch Jones looks like he belongs in a wife beater with a Bud Light in his hand, and he's, you know, about to get arrested for domestic violence. You know what I mean? And my friend can attest to this. Our friend Jordan, he tweeted into the show earlier, Mark Helfrich's first game at Oregon, I remember looking at him pregame, texting Jordan, and said he is the definition of a fireable head coach, and now he's gone. Another coach there's, you know, coaches you can call like deceivably fireable, you know, that might be pulling your leg right now. They're making you think they're pretty good, but they're really not. And I think the biggest one to accuse of that would be Jim McElwain at Florida.
Absolutely, I was just about you took the words right out of my mouth because I was on the Mark Helfrich's fireable bandwagon for a little while. He got hired as right after Chip Kelly left, and I was like, he's going to live off Chip Kelly's players for 3 years, and he went all the way to the national championship game in his first season. And he and I remember they dumped the Gatorade on him after he beat Florida State, and I was like, douse the fire, because it's coming, and now he's already gone. And then you're right about Jim McElwain. I thought he was an average hire at best. I thought he had 3 years max, and we're going into his third year now, and there's no way that he's not not going to be around after that.
Now,
but hang on 1 second, and he looks like he's not, I think he looks fireable,
looks
but
like
he's
a
had
car
this,
salesman.
He's had. He also likes sharks too, but he keeps having the – and it's because the SEC East is so weak. Just so happens – and he's living off Muschamp's defense. We'll see how they do this year. He did get lucky with a transfer quarterback in Zaire. But, yeah, McElwain's one of those deceptively fireables for sure.
I still think he's fireable, but I'm buying into Florida this year because I think they got a quarterback in the SEC East. I think that's a two-team race. I think it's Georgia, Florida. I mean, Kentucky might be able to make some noise. They're going to be okay this year, I think. Tennessee, I really am not buying into Tennessee, but I think it's Georgia and Florida. In that game, you can toss whatever you want out the window. That's always going to be, you know, a backyard brawl. But I think McElwain's going to survive because I think they finally got a quarterback. My biggest gripe about McElwain has always been Florida's strength is their defense. And that was mainly because of Muschamp. If Muschamp did anything, he brought a very good, strong, you know, defensive mindset to Florida. But Florida's offense has been non-existent since he's been there, and isn't that his specialty? I mean, McElwain's an offensive guy, isn't he? And he still hasn't solved that puzzle yet. That's my biggest concern. You brought this guy in because your offense has sucked under Muschamp, so now you have a chance to bring in a good offense to go along with this good defense, and you can't do that.
And you're exactly right. I was just about to say that. And they had a great defense under Muschamp, who I don't think is a great head coach. I know he's at South Carolina right now, and he's done a decent job in his first season. He's not a great coach. He's a great defensive coordinator, and he knows how to coach a defense. And that's what he did at Florida, and that's how he won or that's how he got to a Sugar Bowl at Florida. But his offenses were terrible. Long story short, they were awful. And they bring McElwain in after they get rid of Muschamp, and his defense is great, and his offense is – they are average at best, if not – I mean, they got blown out by Arkansas last year because they couldn't score. They can't move the ball. And it's another thing is they had a good first couple seasons under McElwain. One, I think, is because the East is so weak. But another is I've got a theory that players like playing for new head coaches. When a head coach is new, it brings this new energy, this new aura to a team. And they're like, hey, we got a new coach. This is a new leaf. Let's – play harder, faster, let's do our best for this new coach. Because if you look at the track record of new coaches, typically they have good success in their first year, and then first couple years, and then they start to show their true colors, whether they're going to be an average coach, a fireable coach, or an awful coach like Gene Chizik. He's one of those that was just – or Mark Helfrich's awful coach. So,
well, while we're talking about coaches that they look fireable. Now, there are actually odds on who's the first coach in football to get fired this year, and I think the top three are all in the Pac-12. I think it's Todd Graham and Rich Rod and guys like that. But who in the SEC do you think is the first to get fired? I already know the usual suspects right now, the seats that are boiling a little bit. We got Brett Bielema, who's, I think, finally at the end of his rope. He's got to do something before they start looking at him. You got Kevin Sumlin, and you got Butch Jones. Now, who pulls the trigger first? I have a feeling that Sumlin and Butch Jones could be gone by the end of the year. I would say I'm more confident that Butch Jones, like if you had to ask me what coach in the SEC at the end of the year will not be there, I would say Butch Jones and then Kevin Sumlin. But something tells me that if Texas A&M early in the season loses to UCLA, and Jim Mora was the other one in the Pac-12, whoever loses that game is the first coach on the hot seat, and it could be over Les Miles style, beginning or, you know, middle of the season.
Yeah, I think that there's several coaches who in the SEC who are not going to last, or some of them might last the season, but I think that Texas A&M, Kevin Sumlin, seats the hottest right now. I think it's pretty boiling. They open up at UCLA. You're right. If they lose that, They get two gimmies against Nicholls State and Louisiana Lafayette, and then they get Arkansas at home, South Carolina at home, and Alabama at home. If they start the season, you know, with a loss to UCLA, a couple wins there, a loss to Arkansas, and if they lose to Arkansas, I mean, they're going to get beat by Alabama. But if they lose to either Arkansas or South Carolina and then get blown out by Alabama, he might be gone.
Well, here's the deal. They could be 5-0. They could easily be 5-0 going into the Alabama game, playing UCLA, Nicholls State, Lafayette, and Arkansas and South Carolina. Or they could be 2-2. Or 3-2, I'm sorry, going into that Alabama game. You know what I mean? But I still think that at 3-2, they lose to Alabama and make it 3-3. That might cause them to pull the trigger right there. I'm like, look, you just don't have it in you. Because they're going to get embarrassed by Alabama.
Especially if they get embarrassed by Alabama, which they probably will.
If they're 5-0 at that point and then still get embarrassed by Alabama, they still very well could pull the trigger. But they might wait because Florida very well could beat them the next week.
They could.
If they lose to Alabama and Florida and go 5-2, because that narrative's already been set that Texas A&M's that team that'll go 6-0 and then they finish 8-4, 8-5.
They do that every year, and I knew it last year. Everybody was buying into Texas A&M. They're like, oh, put them in the – Danny Cannell is the classic instance of buying into Texas A&M and teams too early. Bought complete. Everybody's buying into Texas A&M. They're like, oh, they're going to the playoff. They're one of my playoff teams after 3 weeks. And I'm like, calm down. Calm down. They're going to start 5 or 6-0. And I think they started 6-0 last year, and I said they're going to finish 8-4. And they did. And
they were right. They made it into the first playoff poll.
And they finished. I was like, they're going to finish 8-4, and I'm pretty sure they finished 8-4.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some other things. We might finish up the coaches poll there and go touch on a couple other teams and feel if we think they're right. But we're also going to get into this whole Deshaun Hand situation and how they handled that, and we'll talk about some other off the field problems. Not necessarily with Alabama. There's some other teams that are going through this too. But that's all right here. Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio 730-1039, The Ump. Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplet. I do apologize, guys. I don't have my normal energy I normally have. I'm dying. I just don't feel good. But it's okay. It's our first show. I've been so excited about this for a long time. We're going to get into me and Aaron joining us back. But I'm going to get back into the coaches poll in a minute. We actually want to preview the SEC season as well. Some of the important games, the most important games on that SEC football schedule. But first, the whole Deshaun Hand situation. I've sat back and listened to Tom and everybody talk about this all week long. And I really haven't got to put my two cents on it. And it's really up there with everybody else. He was arrested for a DUI, okay? And I was the first one to say, okay, well, suspension's coming, obviously. Well, that was before I knew that the cops were incompetent enough to arrest somebody for a DUI when the whole D part of DUI wasn't even occurring. Driving under the influence is what a DUI is. Well, you're kind of missing the important thing here. He wasn't freaking driving. He was asleep in his car. Sure, he had the car cranked, and I'm assuming because he's a big boy, he's a defensive lineman, he's a big guy, it's hot, it's the middle of the summer, he probably had it on for air conditioning. We don't know if he had the intent to drive or not, but we do know the car was on, he was asleep. He was not a threat to anybody. Public intoxication? Sure, that's fine. And some people, and not many, but some people are up in arms about him not being suspended. Oh, of course, perfect Saban thing to not suspend him for the Florida State game. What do you want to suspend him for? Doing the right thing? Trying to sleep it off? Baker Mayfield didn't get suspended, got arrested for public intox. It's all about context. Baker Mayfield, he wasn't even the reason the cop showed up. The cop showed up to the bar because people were getting in a fight. Baker Mayfield broke that fight up. One of the people fighting got into words with Mayfield. Mayfield was only there to give his story. He was supposed to give his report of what happened. And then he started leaving and running, and they arrested him. He was a witness. They arrested a witness. Sure, he wasn't supposed to run. I get that. But it doesn't seem severe now. Now, when you think about, well, he wasn't even the reason the cops were over there. He wasn't even going out of his way to do anything. He made a stupid mistake. And that's what I can't even really say Deshaun Hand made a stupid mistake. He did the right thing of sleeping it off. I mean, am I wrong here, Aaron? I mean, should he be suspended? Or do you think they should keep this as a DUI even though the car wasn't moving? Or do you think they should knock this down to a public intox and let him play?
Yeah, I don't think that, there should be a suspension. Just from reading everything that I know about the situation, of course, when I saw it, like, you're right, I said, oh, there should be a suspension, but I was thinking he won't miss game time, because you typically think of sometimes just with the track record, you feel like sometimes as an outsider, Nick Saban doesn't suspend guys who make an impact on the field. I heard Colin Cowherd on his show talk about it one time, about how you're like, oh, because of what happened last year with Cam Robinson, who didn't miss any time. He said, oh, you're a starter, you're important, we're not deep at tackle, you're going to play. But then there was another guy who was like a third, who was like a second string guard. They were very deep at guard. He was like, oh, you're gone. He kicked him off the team. But I think that the necessary action is to not suspend it. If you're in a car, it's not moving. Yeah, it was probably hot. So reason to have the air on. But yeah, I don't think there's much debate. And I don't think, I mean, obviously, if the car wasn't moving, he wasn't driving, and he was asleep. You know what they say, you're at a bar, you get too drunk, just sleep out in the car. It's like the song, the Toby Keith song. But yeah, so I think he did. I think that while it might not have been the smartest decision in the world to get in the car in the first place, at least he didn't go anywhere, right, and was sleeping.
Exactly. I don't know what I'm most upset about, though. The cops, you know, abusing their power and taking this as a DUI instead of a public intox. I don't know if they recognized who he was and they were just on a power trip or what. I'm not sure if I'm upset more about that or the fact that some people can't put their ego aside and the fact they hate Alabama to the side and just look at this and say, okay, well, this guy didn't do anything wrong. Some people are like, yeah, should be suspended. This is classic Nick Saban not suspending him, trying to let him get away with it like last year. Well, I mean, he hasn't been convicted of anything yet. He got arrested of a DUI. Let the hearing, you know, pan out. It could come out that he could go into the hearing and be like, yeah, I was going to drive. Arrest me right now. You never know, but it seems pretty clear right now that he shouldn't be suspended. There's no reason for him to be suspended. He made a bad decision, and Saban's going to make him pay for it in some way. He's got to live up to some kind of expectation, but a suspension is just way over the top for this situation.
Especially now, what it takes to get suspended in college football for anybody, not just at Alabama, but anybody, anywhere, for any particular reason, you really have to do something bad to get suspended, especially for an extended period of time in college football.
Absolutely. And now, Aaron, before we have to call this episode over. I kind of hesitated to say that because we're not that close yet. We still got about 30 minutes, but something I wanted to do, I wanted to go through this SEC schedule, all right, and mainly keep it in the preseason, or not preseason, but you know what I mean, the non-conference. And the reason for that is I don't want to get into any of the conference games just yet, just because I don't want to spoil football season yet. I don't want it to come too fast and start looking forward to something. There are a few key matchups for some SEC teams in the non-conference schedule, and I want to go ahead and rank those in order of importance, not best matchup, best game. Order of importance, consider everything. So for ranking them order of importance, and I'm just talking the big games. I'm not talking about Auburn, Georgia Southern, and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Alabama, in order of importance, Alabama, Florida State is probably at the bottom for me. And all things considered, both coaches, their jobs are solidified for as long as they want them, especially Nick Saban. The playoffs are still in play for whoever loses that game. It's a tough road, don't get me wrong. You have to run the table, but that, I mean, do you think Bama can't run the table? You think Florida State won't be able to win the ACC? So that one's not, as far as importance goes, playoff importance and your coaching situation importance, not really. Another game that I'd like to put up there in order of importance would be the Arkansas-TCU game. That's one I don't think a lot of people really talk about. Last year was a good, I think it went to double overtime last year, and Arkansas squeezed that one out. I think this one's in Arkansas this year. But that could be the first test right there for Bielema. You know, we talked about Bielema possibly being on the hot seat. He needs to make sure he goes undefeated in his non-conference schedule. He needs to make sure he has at least an 8-win season, probably. And that's one right off the rip right there. You got Kenny Hill, who's finally settled in 1 year at TCU. Gary Patterson, who's probably that program's best coach ever, most likely. So that's a tough one. And then I'd probably put Florida, Michigan there. And the most important one would be Auburn and Clemson, because that's going to set the tone for the rest of the season, because Auburn's got to go to Clemson. They've got to go to Death Valley. So they've got a really tough schedule, and I think that sets the tone for it. But like I said, if there's one game I'm locking in besides Florida State, Alabama, that would be it. I think Auburn's going to go on the road and beat Clemson in Death Valley, the ACC's version of Death Valley anyway.
Yeah, I think Florida and Michigan is a really good one, because I think that's going to Alabama and Florida State, if that game is lopsided either way, and the only way that it goes lopsided is if Alabama pulls away, in my opinion, which I think that they probably will in that game, but I don't know if it'll be – it won't be USC 52-6 ugly. It's not going to be like that, but no, I think they will handily beat them, 10 to 15 points.
And mainly that's because last year one of Florida State's weaknesses at times was their offensive line. They struggle with consistency there. And I understand you spend all offseason trying to get better, which in the long run you very well may do. But at the beginning of the season for any team, it's not about who's got the most talent or anything. It's for some teams it's about getting into a rhythm for Big 12 offenses and Pac-12 offenses. But for most teams it's about who can go out there and be the most consistent. You know what I mean? You see a lot of teams struggle at the beginning of the season, like USC last year. They didn't have consistent play at the quarterback and other positions. They went on to go to a Rose Bowl and win a Rose Bowl. They got better as the season went along. It's all about who's in the better mindset and who's more consistent. And I think that's going to be Alabama's defense against that Florida State's offensive line.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then you're right about the coaches. There's no storylines with them. Jobs are safe. And then, very well, whoever loses the game, which I think is going to be Florida State, Florida State has a very good chance of running the rest of the table and ending up in the playoff anyway. So, really, it just makes for a really good game, and you might find out a little bit about Florida State. I mean, we know what we're going to get from Alabama. We might find out how good Florida State is. But other than that, they've still got a great chance to run the table. I think Florida and Michigan – is a game where you're going to find out a lot about both teams. Depending on which way it swings, you might find out more about the other one. I think Florida's got a little bit more something to prove in that game. Of course, Michigan does as well. Michigan came off a loss to Florida State in the Orange Bowl last year, so we'll see how they respond to that. But it's a big game in Arlington. And then you're right about Auburn and Clemson. I think Auburn and Clemson in Florida and Michigan provide something, like I said when you said you find out a lot about these teams. Which I think that's important to find out about these teams early in these early big season games. And Auburn, sitting there ranked 13 now, I'm definitely more of a pessimistic Auburn fan. I don't like to buy into hype, because typically when Auburn gets hyped up, they do not do well. They do much better when they're underrated or unranked to start the season and end up surprising people. That's typically when they're at their best. And I would love for them to go on the road and beat Clemson. I think it's going to be a tough environment. But I think that game for Auburn sets the tone for the rest of the season, because if they beat Clemson, I think they're rolling to LSU at 6-0, because they got Georgia Southern, Clemson, Mercer, Missouri, and Mississippi State and Ole Miss. And Ole Miss is not going to go to a bowl game. They might win four games this year with way things are going.
Ole Miss can't go to a bowl game.
Oh, they're on the. I did not see. I haven't looked at the all the sanctions that have gone up against Ole Miss.
They self-imposed one, I think.
They did. I didn't think the NCAA was handing down any, or that they were self-imposing. All I read was all that stink with Hugh Freeze. But so they're not going to go to a bowl game. But even if they could, I don't think they would anyway.
I agree with you.
And so
here's my piece on Auburn, and I understand that it's going to sound like you and I are both jumping on the Stidham bandwagon the same way that most everybody did with Jeremy Johnson and JF3. But there's more behind it for me on this one, and it's because I know what they have coming back in running back. They have Cam Petway, the leading yards per game rusher, coming back in the SEC this season, and their backups, Kerryon Johnson, very possibly 2,000-yard backs this year, each having 1,000 yards. I almost want to say they're the best running back duo in the country or in the SEC, because you've got Alabama with so much talent in the backfield. You're really not sure what's going to happen there, but I think they're going to be more running back by committee. LSU, you do have Darius Geis. We really don't know much about his backup, but Georgia, you've got Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. They're the more polished and experienced guys. They're both seniors this year. But I the guys at Auburn are just so big and bruising. You've got three really good offensive linemen up in the middle, the left guard, the right guard, and the center. I just think there's so much behind that offense there. And Jared Stidham has proved at Baylor to be able to run that zone read really well. Now, he's got a good arm and everything. I'm not saying he's going to come out and win a Heisman. I'm just saying that they finally have a guy who we've already seen in competitive college football run the system that he's getting himself into. So that's what I like about
him. And he gives them that, you know, real prototypical pocket passer, which I think with this core group of receivers, they have a very young receivers, but very talented receivers, Kyle Davis, Nate Craig Myers, guys like that who can make plays, and they did in the spring game. And you're right about the running backs. Petway, I think, is going to go for 1,000 yards. Johnson might. He's a little bit injury prone, and he has been for the past couple of seasons, but we'll see. But Auburn, just looking into them, they do have a very good offensive line, or they have at least the best offensive line they've had probably since since 2013 for sure, because the 2013 offensive line was extremely good, and so was the one in 2010. But this year, I mean, Braden Smith is probably the best guard in the SEC. And like I said, I'm a pessimistic Auburn fan, but I'm not pessimistic about Braden Smith. I think he is the best guard. There's a good chance he might be the best lineman in the SEC, but that might be a stretch. But the best guard for sure, in my opinion. So they have the pieces. Defensively, they're going to need somebody to step up, and it's going to have to there's two guys that are going to have to step. There's actually the key to Auburn's defense is three players, one at each level. Marlon Davidson on the defensive line is going to have to be huge. Deshaun Davis at the linebacker position, and then Carlton Davis at cornerback. Those three guys are going to have to dominate at their respective positions. Yep. If Auburn wants to have a great season.
And that was my biggest question mark. You brought up Marlon Davidson. And that's my biggest question mark for Auburn, because they're replacing Carl Lawson and Montrevious Adams. That to me is the biggest question mark for them. But offensively, I think they'll be just fine. They're going to have receivers show up and step up, but I don't think that's going to be too much of a problem. I think they'll be able to put points on the board. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say their offense is going to be better than last year.
Well, I mean, that's not that hard to do.
It shouldn't be.
Let's hope that it isn't.
And I bet they have at least one first down in the second half against Georgia.
Let's hope that happens too. But you know, I've come to expect anything with Auburn. They come out last year and beat Arkansas 56-3, and then go out and lay an egg against Georgia. So you really don't know what to expect.
Almost lose to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, almost lose to Vanderbilt.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there, because we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take our last break of the show. But when we come back, everybody, I've already voted in the SEC East and West, but we're going to come back and I'm going to restate who I voted for, and then we're going to get you to rank the SEC East. We're going to tease you guys. We're going to get Aaron's SEC East this week, next week probably SEC West and champion, and then leading up to football, we're going to give you guys our playoff and everything. We're trying to stretch this thing out the best we can, but we're going to take a quick break. This is the Tony Mac and the Triplett Show right here on Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplett, last segment of the show. So we're going to get mine and Aaron's SEC East rankings from bottom to top. So Aaron, I'm going to go ahead and read mine, since I've already voted and I've already posted it on social media and stuff, and most people already know mine. So I'm going to go ahead and read mine so we can give you a few extra minutes and you can really break yours down. At 7, finishing last, I had Vanderbilt, and then Missouri at 6. I think Missouri's going to be able to put up some points this year. I think they were the fifth best offense in the SEC last year. South Carolina at 5, Kentucky at 4. I was really close. I wanted to put Kentucky at 3, but I kind of, you know, wussed out. I got Kentucky at 4, Tennessee at 3, which I don't feel comfortable about. Georgia at 2, and I have Florida winning the East. Aaron, the floor is yours, sir.
Ours are very similar. There's a couple of differences. Coming in last, I've got Missouri actually coming in last of the SEC.
I'm not very. Up, Aaron!
Nope. And continue, please.
It's not because I love Vanderbilt completely. I just think that Vanderbilt does have some pieces coming back, and I think that Derek Mason's going to have his best season yet this upcoming year. And I just don't think I think Missouri is ashamed. It's a shame to have them in the SEC. They're so bad, and they've been so bad the past couple of years. And so I'm just going to – it's also partially because I don't like Missouri that I also want them to come in last, but I also think that there's a good chance they do. So I've got them coming in seventh. I've got Vanderbilt next in sixth. In fifth, I've got South Carolina. Fourth, I've got Kentucky. You're right. I really did want to put Kentucky at that three spot, but I just think that Tennessee's got more talent. I think South Carolina's going to have a good, better season than people think, because I think Jake Bentley is the best quarterback nobody's heard of this season, because not a lot of people, because he beat Tennessee last year, had a strong end into the season, had a real strong game against South Florida in the Birmingham Bowl. But I got them at five, Kentucky four, Tennessee at three, which you're right, not confident of. Georgia at number two. Georgia's the best team in the East, hands down, but they're not going to win it, because what's going to happen is Florida's going to win the East. Georgia's going to beat Florida, possibly handily, this year. But Georgia's going to lose a couple of games that they shouldn't lose in the SEC to keep them out and not play in the SEC championship game, because I think Florida really, they might lose to LSU and Georgia and Florida State, but all three of Georgia's losses potentially are going to come in the SEC, and they're going to lose the tiebreak because they'll have a worse SEC record.
The main reason I wanted to put Kentucky at three, I don't know why I wussed out. I really wish I hadn't. Kentucky's got a very easy schedule. Pull that up if you want to look
at
it.
I've got it. I mean, they're on the road against Southern Miss, then they have Eastern Kentucky. They go on the road to South Carolina, Florida at home, Eastern Michigan, Missouri at Mississippi State, Tennessee and Ole Miss at home, at Vanderbilt, at Georgia, and Louisville.
It's very favorable for Kentucky. And then you turn around and you look at who we put at three. You look at Tennessee's schedule, and they've got Georgia Tech. They very well could lose that game right off the rip. I mean, that triple option's very tough to defend. It's just something you don't always see. You know what I mean? So they very well could lose that. And then they got Florida a couple weeks later, week three. Georgia a couple weeks after that. They go to Alabama, to Kentucky. And then from the West, they also draw LSU. They've got Bama and LSU. LSU does have to come to Knoxville.
That is a late game for a crossover game for Tennessee and LSU. November 18th.
Yeah, so very tough schedule for Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee
I think they're 7-5. And this I'm saying after I came out with my rankings. I really, really want Tennessee to finish fourth, because I think they will. But I think they're a 7-win team. I don't think they even hit Butch's 8-win mark this year.
Yeah, I'd like to see Kentucky come in third, but I think Tennessee will ultimately. But I think Kentucky, they could potentially start 3-0, and I think they will, because, I mean, they go on the road to South Carolina. I think that'll be a really good game. But I think Kentucky, they've got is it Stephon Johnson, the quarterback? I can't exactly remember his first name.
In Tennessee, while you're trying to figure that out, Tennessee very well, while you're saying Kentucky could start 3-0, Tennessee very well could start, 1-2, losing to Georgia Tech and Florida. So,
oh, easily for sure. But yeah, Stephon Johnson, I was right. It was Stephon Johnson. And then so they start 3-0, then they get Florida at home. And, of course, they hadn't beat Florida, what is it, like 30-something tries. And that game will be close, but Florida will win, because they always do, because we've talked about it. Don't pick against a streak, even though it's bound to end sometime, but it's going to be close. But and then Eastern Michigan and Missouri, I mean, they could potentially start 5-1.
Don't pick against a streak. Now, I'm gonna stop you there, because last year I did not pick against the streak. I picked Florida to beat Tennessee, which I looked very good doing so. You picked against the streak last year and picked Tennessee to win that game. So I'd hold off on that real quick, because it benefited you really well last year to pick against the streak.
Yeah, and I mean, but the Kentucky-Florida streak is so much longer than the Florida-Tennessee streak.
I think it's going to be rougher for Kentucky to win that game, because this year, like I said, I think Florida's got a quarterback that'll finally, at least make their offense something. So I think that's where – and I'm mainly picking Kentucky that high. I think they can pull an upset here and there, but I mainly think it's because of Kentucky's schedule is why I've got them.
Yeah, I can potentially see them winning. This is a stretch, but they could win 9 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too much of a stretch, because they're still a pretty decent team. I mean, what, Benny Snell, is that his name?
Yeah.
Coming back, good running back.
They'd have to upset – I mean, they'd have to beat Tennessee. Yeah, they'd have to beat Tennessee. They'd either have to beat Tennessee, Georgia or Louisville.
They very well could beat Ole Miss.
They could. I think they're going to beat Ole Miss.
Ole Miss can put up points, but I'm telling you right now, Ole Miss couldn't. Me and you can go out there and score 35 points on Ole Miss.
But I mean, Kentucky beat Louisville last year, correct? They upset.
Yeah, they beat Louisville at the end of the season. I don't think they do that again this year.
I think it'll be tough. They do get Louisville at home instead of on the road, but I mean, lose to Florida, lose to Georgia, and lose to Louisville, and possibly beat Tennessee or lose to Tennessee and beat Louisville. They could easily win 9 games.
Yeah, so their wins here are Southern Miss, Eastern Kentucky.
Assuming South Carolina. That's going to be a close game, though, I think.
Eastern Michigan, Missouri, at Mississippi State. That'll be a tricky one.
That'll be another tricky game, but because I feel like we've kind of thrown Mississippi State by the wayside. But
I'm seeing at the very least 7 wins, possibly 8 or 9. Yeah. So, I mean,
And they overachieved last year. They started slow but ended up winning several. I think they won 7 games last year.
They made a bowl game, so that was very good. I think they made a bowl game and got beat by Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
So, Georgia Tech, that was one of the 3 teams Georgia Tech got last year. And that's where stats can be misleading, because we mentioned, the ACC did kind of control the SEC last year. But it was mainly 3 teams. I mean, you had South Carolina, or Clemson, who beat South Carolina, and Auburn, and Bama. And then you had Florida State, who beat Florida, Ole Miss. And then you had Georgia Tech beat Vanderbilt and Kentucky and Georgia. So there's 7 or 8 right there, and just between 3 teams.
And just looking at how tough Tennessee's – you're right about Tennessee's schedule being tough. Like, I see 5 – there's 5 potential losses at least. I mean, you got – I mean, they could easily go 6-6. We're talking about how easy Kentucky could win 9 games. Tennessee could easily lose 6 games. I mean, Georgia Tech, that Labor Day game week 1, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Kentucky – and LSU are all games. Even South Carolina. South Carolina got them last year.
Yep.
And so they could easily go 6-6.
All right, everybody. We want to thank you so much for listening to our first episode. I'm sorry I didn't feel very well. I'm hopefully going to feel a lot better next week. But we want to thank you so much. We will be back on behalf of Aaron Triplett. I'm Tony Mack, and this has been Tony Mack and the Triplett. Take care, everybody. Have a great weekend.